Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin, you're listening to Up North News.
Well, here we are, and good morning. It's Tuesday, August 23rd. Didn't make that note right in my notes here. Excuse me while I get some whiteout, put that on the screen. Tuesday, August 23rd. Welcome to our Tuesday coffee break. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Luke Mathers is here as well. The birthday boy, Luke Mathers, is here. Happy birthday, buddy.
It was my half birthday yesterday, and I missed it.
Big things. I hope you're fiat. Wait, what? Wait, what did you say?
It was my half birthday yesterday.
It's a good thing I didn't just take a sip of this coffee or I had to spit it all over the screen. How old are you? Including the half, of course.
Oh, I don't think you want me to share that with you because then you may get really upset and spit out the coffee.
You think whatever age that is, that a half birthday is still a thing. And I think that's adorable. I'm going to send you a card with $5 in it. That's sweet.
Perfect. That'll help the caffeine habit that I have developed from all of this morning programming that I'm doing now.
Oh yeah. Like $5 will get you a coffee any place nowadays, you know.
I said go towards it. It would help. I'm not saying it covers the whole cost.
It would make a down payment on your next half soy macchiato, whatever the heck they drink down there. So
I like lattes, but I'll do a vanilla latte from time to time. But most of the time, it's just coffee with maybe a little honey in it. My grandpa and now my uncle still do it, but they run a honey farm in the Milwaukee area. So the honey business is family business, and therefore...
Buzzing?
Yeah.
Can we say buzzing? Come buzzing. On, let's do it.
But that's how I like to have my coffee, a little honey in it, to naturally sweeten it up.
Interesting. I don't know that I've tried that. And I have... a brother-in-law and his wife who have bees at their place near Manitowoc. I'll have to look into that. It might bring some joy to my morning and make me not nearly so sarcastic about somebody celebrating a half birthday. I could use that.
In 6 months, I'll be 29.
Oh, all right. Well,
see, I knew it. I knew,
ladies and gentlemen. Now I'm depressed. So
I told you you'd be upset with me. Like I anticipated that, but yeah,
that my daughters, and of course they don't listen because they're in other states, so I think you can still give your own kids ages, are 31 and 33, and so this is especially disheartening for me, talking to somebody of, you know, I just can't understand your generation, being in your 20s. At least my kids are in their 30s. But as I've mentioned, my oldest grandson has a birthday this week, and we had to talk to the two younger ones last night via FaceTime with my younger daughter, and they are 3 years old and 4 months old. And the best thing right now is that the three-year-old little boy recognizes me. And it is kind of heartwarming until you understand why he does. So I come up on the screen along with my wife, the most wonderful grandma any little boy could ever want. And you know, he loves her. She's very loving, et cetera, et cetera. But we come up on the screen and first thing you hear from him is, "Grandpa." And of course, that just melts your heart. But then you have to remember why it is that way. His favorite show that he watches almost on a loop is a cartoon called Trash Truck. Yes, it's a cartoon about a garbage truck, an animated garbage truck, and a little boy who loves Trash Truck, and then his animal friends. There's a bear and a raccoon and a mouse. And there's a grandpa character who is, you know, makes special appearances now and then and takes the little boy fishing and helps the little boy out with this or that. And so, you know, grandpa, he hears that in the cartoon all the time. So at first I want to feel good, but then I realize the only reason he says my name more than grandma's name is, you know, because his favorite cartoon is about a garbage truck. But I'll take it. I will take
the
little victories.
There you go. You know? Yeah, it's a win. My niece and nephew are about that same age, and their obsession with FaceTime and calling on the phone is very big right now. They like to see across the phone. So even though I can't be there all the time, they are thrilled when they can call.
The 3-year-old is at the point now where the 8-year-old used to be, and it's just adorable where they now get it enough that they want to take the tablet or the phone. First, they want to give it a kiss, which is great again, but what do? They accidentally hang up the connection because they hit the little red button trying to give you a kiss. Or the step after that is they take it from their parent and go, you know, basically, I got this. I'm going to walk around with this. So they walk around and babble again until they hang it up or they hand it to the dog and the dog licks it and it disconnects you. It's still all better than anything there was before, you know, in olden times when you had to, you know, maybe send a written letter, you know, back and forth. So to have this kind of instant communication is amazing, because whether it's the 3-year-old or the 8-year-old, but not the 16-year-old, I can ask these small children about their half birthday and get them all, they get all excited, you know, to be 3.5 or to be 8.5 and all that comes with it. And so for one little boy in southern Wisconsin to tell everybody here up north about his 28.5 birthday is just the best. So you all send your happy birthday greetings to Luke at radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Just happy half birthday is all you have to say. It'll make us feel real good. We will talk about the much more serious topic of school lunches and a Republican legislator who wants to shame those who need free or reduced meals next. You're up north. What, Luke, honestly, is this some kind of father-son thing now, the age difference between us, that you're playing cats in the cradle just because I teased you for saying it was your half birthday? Is that really what this is about?
I don't know. I mean, you take it however you'd like to take it, Pat.
When I'm down there to visit later this week, we're just going to go out and have a catch. You know, we're just going to continue to build these bonds between us, if you don't mind.
I cannot wait. I can't wait.
Okay. Good. It's Monday morning. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We are going to be joined in a moment here by Representative Christina Shelton of the Green Bay area. But I'm going to offer up my apologies in advance. And if you'll forgive a personal aside before I introduce the assembly representative, I'm doing well now. I am. My wife and I are doing well. She grew up on a dairy farm. Now she's a physician. I'm doing fine with my two different roles here as an editor and a radio talk show host. Both of us grew up in families that were distinctly not well-to-do. I stood in line with my mom when she'd have to go wait for food stamps. I had a very sickly little brother who ultimately died at the age of 9, and we had to go through all the hoops for charity care there. So I know we like to use the word triggered, you know, like in a sarcastic way, like, you know, somebody's triggered by this. I am truly triggered by the fact that any politician, much less a state legislator in Wisconsin, is much more comfortable if children can essentially be shamed if they need or have to ask for assistance to pay for lunch or breakfast in school. Thankfully, we have somebody like Assembly Rep Christina Shelton working on behalf of the kids, the parents, even the educators, who want to make sure that all children are well fed and are on that level playing field. And I'm sorry, one more personal thing. If all kids having a level playing field in terms of eating lunch, if that level playing field smacks of socialism to you, you need to go rethink your definition of that and maybe look for the word decency instead. Representative Shelton, my great apologies for the rant preceding all this. Thank you for being here. How are you?
Thanks for having me today, Pat. And no apologies needed. I feel equally frustrated. So I'm excited to be able to talk to you and your listeners about this issue today.
This stems from an open letter that you were looking to have published. And I think one of the local papers, either declined or hasn't gotten back to you yet on this. And so you shared it elsewhere, and we are certainly going to share it at upnorthnewswi.com. But I thought it warranted a conversation as well. And it opens with three different Facebook comments from Republican Senator Eric Wimberger. And I'm going to read those off first, and then we're going to get into your motivation to writing the open letter. And Senator Wimberger writes, "In the olden days, those on social services were called to the office to pick up their lunch tickets at my school. Stigma claims had some merit." I'm going to say that again. "Stigma claims had some merit. Thanks, Eric. But every kid who needs food gets fed nowadays, and the systems are set up to adequately mask the funding source. In my opinion, there is no justification for universal free food for kids, since those who need it," in all capital letters, "get it." And he goes on and on to talk about the proposed concept of, quote unquote, free meals for all. Can someone explain to me why we should do that? And boy, Representative Shelton, am I glad you took the bait. Can you explain to us why we should have free meals for all?
Well, I mean, look, Senator Wimberger is fundamentally wrong here on when he makes the statement that those who need it get it. And we know that that is just untrue. I am a teacher by trade. I have a health education background. I'm a mom of two kids that participate and eat school meals and sometimes pack, but are public school kids. And I've actually been working on this issue nationally with school districts from around the country, looking at best practices policy at both the district level and the state and federal level around school meals. And he is just wrong around this idea that the system is working. The system is not working the way that it is intended to. We know that kids who qualify for free and reduced meals do fall through the cracks. We know that there are kids who do not qualify who are food insecure or hungry. But beyond that, we know that universal school meal programs are have incredible benefits for all kids. And that means all means all. So there are benefits that are academic, benefits that are economic, benefits that are cultural, and benefits that are administrative through the food meal system. So I wanted to be able to take Senator Wimberger to school, if you will, as a teacher, and help him better understand why this issue is so critical and why he maybe needs to have a little bit more empathy for the communities that he says that he serves.
Well, and that's a great point, the empathy about a community, because there is still this notion of, again, either shaming or blaming the poors, a term that I'm borrowing from our friend Scott Ross, because it just seems that that's the level of disdain that is shared with people who, especially children, through who no fault of their own, find themselves in not the most comfortable of circumstances. And as a result, we've had all of these ideas and programs over the years that try to level things out, at least for the children, so they have opportunities to learn. And that was enhanced, if I'm not mistaken, during the pandemic by making school meals more affordable when so many families were struggling with temporary to permanent job loss during the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been on the show talking about this issue. This is the issue for me. This is, again, something that I know well and something that I'm passionate about. So if you remember back in March of 2020, when the pandemic hit, the USDA did something that it had never done before. And it basically made school meals free for all, breakfast and lunch. There were no income requirements. There were no income eligibility checks. Food service directors didn't have to collect those tedious forms and check. And it also gave flexibility through the delivery model. So we were able to do car lines and just drop meals right into people's cars or their trunks. And we were able to provide hundreds of thousands of meals. I was one of those people volunteering back at the beginning of the pandemic. I was on the Green Bay School Board at Franklin Middle School for hours in the cold that spring, that Wisconsin spring. And people would come up and say, "I need 20 meals. I need to give meals to everyone in my apartment complex. Or I'm coming by to get meals because this is the one thing I'm going to do today that gets me out of the house. And we're taking a little trip through the community or whatever it was, but it was a community building experience. And we had that program up until June. That program went through June. It was free meals for all, breakfast and lunch, and that was extended by the federal government. But that program ended in June. And so the Healthy School Meals for All bill takes action at the state level. It is modeled after the California bill that just passed and was signed into law a few weeks ago that maximizes free and reduced reimbursements through the federal government, but then it brings state funding and through GPR dollars to cover kids that don't qualify for free and reduced. But I want to point out something here that's really important. This is not just an investment. I'm doing air quotes for those of you who can't see me in kids and meals. This is an investment in local farmers and growers. This is an investment in farm to school. This is an economic investment in communities. And this is an investment in working families. We know that working families, moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas and aunts and uncles are working 2-3 jobs. Working families have been sacrificing for years. They've been doing what we've asked them to do, work hard. This takes something off of working families. It allows them to send their kids to school knowing that they're going to be fed every day the same meal that everybody else. And oh, by the way, Pat, school meals tend to be healthier. They are healthier than the average home packed lunch. So the benefits are extreme and wide reaching.
And they just make sense from a human decency point of view. We're requiring kids to go to school. Let's make sure they're well fed. And let's get over the notion that there's some kind of, you know, one size fits all description of a child or a family that's in need. You mentioned you're volunteering. I've done the same with a food pantry through our church that we attend up in Barron County, where, again, once a month, the line of cars runs out the parking lot and down the street. And you look in those cars as you're, you know, loading in donated groceries by and large. And these are folks who, I guess maybe some people think every one of the cars is a jalopy, and it certainly is not, because poverty itself is the kind of circumstance that can, no pun intended, turn on a dime when suddenly a job is lost, right, or a child gets ill, or, you know, a divorce, some other circumstance that comes up. And so this broad brush painting of, you know, low income families is especially disheartening when they were not seeking out this problem. I mean, even if their parents engaged in some kind of bad behavior, why wouldn't you want the kids to have a chance to, you know, follow a different path?
Yeah, absolutely. And this ends, you know, school lunch shaming. It ends school meal debt. We have varying policies around the state of Wisconsin around how districts manage those processes. And here in the Green Bay Area Public School District, we do not go after families or kids or give different meals when kids have debt in their school lunch account.
Oh, but they do elsewhere. And isn't that?
They do elsewhere. That's absolutely right.
Is there anything more maddening than hearing that, you know, some kid was denied lunch, or they give kids, you know, a cheap bologna sandwich? And I just want to go to those places and ask, where is your humanity?
Well, absolutely. And look, the other part of this too is it's the financial impact of it. So the Green Bay District absorbs those costs into their budget, but that could be for some districts, and I don't know exactly what the numbers are up here, but perhaps tens or, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so this is also an investment in reimagining and revolutionizing school meals. You know, when you think about when more kids participate in eating school breakfast and school lunch, those reimbursement rates bring in additional money into the school nutrition programs, and it lowers the cost of the production per meal. So that allows districts to have more funding to, for example, pay their workers more. Food service workers tend to be the lowest paid in school districts. If parents are interested in things like scratch cooking, healthier ingredients, upgrading their kitchen so that they can do more on-site cooking in schools, that takes additional revenue. So when I talk about this, I also speak to the parents who say, well, what about the quality of meals, right? What about farm to school? I want to do more locally sourced ingredients and fresh ingredients. And I say, yep, this is the most important step for us to be able to get to that broader picture. And the fact that my senator, Senator Eric Wimberger, who represents the 90th, the city of Green Bay, but also, by the way, you know, districts like, you know, up in Marinette and Peshtigo, rural America or rural Wisconsin, those rural schools also are begging us to take action on this bill because they need the revenue and because they want to do right by their kids.
Yeah, because they have a higher rate of expense, for example, for transportation costs. The school buses have to travel more and such. And one other quick note, you mentioned earlier about this was additional aid that came from the pandemic and then it came to an end. It didn't have to come to an end. Just to be clear, Republicans in Congress stopped that.
Absolutely. And the Healthy School Meals Coalition has been meeting with our state federal delegation. We are pushing all action on every level. But yeah, they failed to take action. So we're pushing at the state level.
State Representative Christina Shelton is joining us. We will take a break and continue the discussion after this. You're up north.
We're going to have a good time there.
You're listening to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It's Tuesday morning, August 23rd. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and I'm joined this hour by Representative Christina Shelton. We've been talking about an open letter that she wrote to her state senator, Eric Wimberger, about the subject of school lunches, and where he asks, you know, can someone explain to me why we should have free meals for children? And the representative has done a great job of explaining that in the open letter here on the radio. But she'd also like to do that in person. And you know, you have definitely taken the high road and invited Senator Eric Wimberger to discuss this further with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, what I would love is if we could have a committee hearing, Pat, to talk about this bill, the Healthy School Meals for All bill, because that is the most public and democratic way that we discuss with stakeholders and leaders and experts the key issues that we find in our communities. But as you know,
I was going to say the number of Democratic authored bills getting a committee hearing.
Yep.
Not what it used to be, is it?
Yeah. I think what's the number? It's like over 380 Democratic authored bills in the assembly, 7 making it to committee. And how many passed, Pat?
That's probably a zero. But I mean, just even getting a public hearing. Yeah. Here, Grandpa's going to reminisce now. When I was in the legislature and Republicans were in the minority, we had about 40% of Republican authored bills at least got the courtesy of a public hearing. And Republicans are doing the same for roughly 3% of Democratic bills, at least the courtesy of a public hearing. So I stepped on you when you said the next logical step would at least be a public hearing on this bill.
Right. Well, when Senator Wimberger asked, can somebody please explain to me why this bill matters? I don't want to explain that to him on Facebook. I actually would rather not explain that to him in an open letter. I would like to do that in a public committee hearing in the Capitol, where we could come together and have an honest, constructive dialogue about the issue and about the bill. But alas, you know that that's not going to happen. So I wrote this open letter answering the senator's question is why is this important? But then, you know, he also posted on Facebook, in my opinion, there's no justification for universal free food for kids since those who need it get it. And so I fear that the senator has already made up his mind. You know, he kind of asks this question, but then he retracts it and says, actually, I don't really care. I don't really think there's a justification. And so I wanted to outline to him the impact of this program on my and our community, because Senator Wimberger is my senator. He represents my assembly district. And I know the communities that he represents because I represent them too. And I talk to the same, we're talking to the same people. In fact, we launched this bill out in Pulaski in the Ashwaubenon School District, which is a suburban school district on the west side outside of the city of Green Bay, just passed a resolution supporting this bill and urging lawmakers to take action. So this isn't an urban, again, doing air quotes, school district issue. So I have taken 3 steps, Pat, in my good faith attempts for negotiation. One is I have invited I'm inviting Senator Wimberger to the September Healthy School Meals Coalition meeting. If he comes to that, he will have access to over 80 statewide member organizations and key stakeholder people who care passionately about school meals. I am calling on him to ask his Republican colleagues to bring this bill to a committee hearing so we can have that discussion in public. But then lastly, I am inviting Senator Eric Wimberger to lunch. So if we're going to talk about lunch and school meals, we should do that where lunch happens. And that is the cafeteria, the school cafeteria. So I'm asking him to meet me in September in one of our wonderful Green Bay area public schools for lunch, where we can eat a meal together and talk about the state of school meals.
He writes something that really shows the difference between Republican politicians or ideologues versus the people that you talk to, many of whom are Republican voters or Republican leaning, but they are people who still have a sense of compassion. And I see that in the following comment from Senator Wimberger. Proponents of, you know, free school lunches base it on a convoluted concept that a child who gets public money feels embarrassed and it hurts their self-esteem and development. Therefore, everyone should be on public assistance, managed by the elite knowers. So there's no shame learned with a concept of taking other people's money by taxation. The answer is apparently not to work it out with parents without the child's knowledge, like is done now. Definitely no larger social political agenda at work. Senator Wimberger, no real person talks like that. No real person knocking on the door says that. When you're talking about, you know, the elites and the, and this one is especially good, the concept of taking other people's money by taxation. Anytime I hear that from a politician, I already know you have disqualified yourself from public service, because you're then depending on, if taxation is theft to you, you're depending on the whims of elites who decide they will or will not fund education, will or will not fund lunch. And that is just not something that American democracy is about, Representative. I have to feel the Republican-leaning people at your doors do not talk like this guy.
It's so funny you said that, Pat, because I had to read this this comment post about five times to try to make sense of what he was saying. But this idea that it is about the elite knowers, right? The elite knowers. Does Senator Eric Wimberger think that the Ashwaubenon School Board are elitists? Does he think that the Pulaski School Board president and school board members are elitists? Does he think that teachers are elitists? Does he think that farmers and growers who have come to me and said, we have seen a tremendous economic boom and growth due to the fact that districts need more lettuce and carrots and cucumbers, and we have been able to hire more helpers and more farmers to help us get product. Does he think farmers and growers are elites? Because those are the people that I'm talking to every single day. And the truth of the matter is, Pat, is the person who sounds like an elitist in these comments is Senator Wimberger himself. And the fact that he is projecting his own that onto others says a lot about his leadership in the Senate, unfortunately. And that is just me being brutally honest.
Well, and it's well-deserved, because again, keep in mind that Senator Wimberger, like every legislative Republican, has put the legislature on a nearly 10-month paid vacation by their own choosing to do nothing for most of the year while collecting a paycheck and sitting on a roughly $5 billion state surplus. They are squandering it, hoping to use it for tax cuts targeted toward the wealthy, not putting it to use this year by people that are in need. Now, you've already outlined how your proposal can be funded, but the question remains, aren't there other things that could be done this year with that state surplus that benefit Wisconsinites of all stripes?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been on doors every single day. I'm knocking at over 50 doors a day for my reelection campaign for November. And by the, you know, just talking to people, and I tell people all the time, whether you vote for me or not, if I win in November, I will be your voice in Madison. And it is important for us to have this dialogue. The number one issue in my community up here in the 90th is inflation, rising costs of gas, food, housing, transportation. it has been crippling for families. And we are sitting right now on a over a $5 billion budget surplus. That's billion with a B, as the governor likes to say. And what I would love for us to do is to come back into Madison, move and activate and pass a plan that would take that money, that public money, and put it back into the pockets of working families, not into corporations, not into the millionaires and billionaires that are making record profit right now, not just in Wisconsin, but around the country, but into working families, helping them to offset the cost. You know, we have families right now that are going back to school in a week and a half, rising costs of health, childcare. I mean, families are trying to get back to work. Mothers are trying to get back to work. If you can't afford childcare, how do you expect people or even have childcare? How do you expect people to get back to work? And the other part is, I was at Target yesterday with my kids getting the, you know, purchasing the items that they need to get back to school. Those items, pencils, pencil cases, you know, binders, and it's over $100 per kid for my kids to purchase those items. So families are squeezed now more than ever. And the fact that Republicans have gaveled out and sent us all home for a vacation is it's immoral and it's lazy. And I call on them to bring us back so that we can put some of that public money back into working families.
And maybe one of the things they could do is, after a decade of kicking and screaming, they could acknowledge that expanding Medicaid into what's known as Badger Care here makes sense, not only from a human standpoint, but from a budget standpoint.
Absolutely. Look, we passed on, you know, expanding Medicaid last year. I spoke on the floor passionately about it. You know, it would have brought in, you know, I think it was like $1.6 billion in additional state revenue. That's money we essentially left on the table. It would have expanded childcare or healthcare, sorry, to an additional 90,000 Wisconsinites. They walked away from it. They walked away from extending health insurance to folks who need it and additional state revenue. And they said, look, we don't need that money and we don't need that assistance to help people, working families. It doesn't reflect the values of the state of Wisconsin. It doesn't reflect the needs or the wants of the folks I talk to at the door every day. And my goal when I am out in community every day is letting people know that I am working hard for them and that they should be voting for Democrats up and down the ticket, because Democrats are voting for them.
In a preview of coming attractions tomorrow in our 9 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to one of your colleagues, State Representative Jody Emerson of Eau Claire. And then she is going to introduce not one or two or three, but four women who are running for legislative offices across Western Wisconsin. We talked about recently the gap in voter registration. Wisconsin, it has the third highest voter registration gap in terms of how many more women than men are registering to vote. They are clearly motivated by something. I expect them to talk about it tomorrow, but I expect you've probably heard one or two things about what motivates women to vote this year.
Well, I'm so excited. Jody's going to be on the call tomorrow. She is one of my favorite folks to work with in the legislature. She's such a firecracker, and I know she's working her rear off over in Eau Claire. So, Jody, if you're listening, keep kicking butt. Yes, women are fired up. Families are fired up. But even beyond that, Republicans care about choice. They care about reproductive justice. It is not just women. It is people who are going to be impacted by a lack of choice in their reproductive care and in their family planning. I was outdoors yesterday. I met with a woman. She was a Democrat. Her husband was a Republican. And she looked at me and said, my husband was outraged at the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and he's considering voting for a Democrat this year. But you know, absolutely. Young women right now are mobilizing. Here in Green Bay, we have a Women's Rights Green Bay group that has thousands of members on Facebook. These women started off with organizing demonstrations back in the fall of 2021. Just last week, they hosted a benefit concert at the Tarleton Theater here in Green Bay. They booked three different local bands, and all of the money went to helping women access the abortion care that they need out of state. And so we are seeing activation and organizing at a level we never have, but we know that we have to translate that anger into action. And that seems to be happening with these voter registrations. So we got to get them to the polls in November, and we got to keep pushing.
this final question sounds tongue-in-cheek, but I actually do mean it seriously. Republican gubernatorial nominee Tim Michaels has flip-flopped on several things already. Everything from the, you know, the Donald Trump endorsement to what he would do about the State Elections Commission. His latest flip-flop was he was only going to take maximum donations of $500. He's flip-flopped. It's now he'll take the full $20,000 donation. So I ask in all seriousness, somebody who currently continues to say the 1849 abortion ban mirrors his beliefs. Do you think it's still possible he will flip-flop on that even and recognize what he's losing in terms of even Republican women who think that that's too much?
It's certainly going to be interesting, Pat. I think where you see Tim Michaels coming is on, you know, he's on the Trump train. And if Trump says jump, Tim is going to jump. And if he says, you know, move on these issues, he's going to try to align himself with Trumpism as much as he possibly can. And I think possibly to the end of his, and it will be to the end of his campaign when he loses in November, because he is so out of touch with what Wisconsinites want and where we stand. I mean, to say that you personally align with a law from 1849, that was 1 year after the California gold rush. Give
says
me a
so
freaking
much.
Break.
That's right.
Right. I mean, it would be funny if it wasn't true.
Representative Christina Shelton, this was great. Let's do it again soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good day.
We'll be back. Welcome back. Tuesday morning, Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow, along with the half birthday boy, Luke Mathers. Not that he's half a boy.
It was yesterday. It was
half
yesterday.
A birthday. It's all we got. You didn't tip us off at the time. We couldn't have brought, you know, cupcakes with sparkles on them or whatever you give for a half birthday these days.
Just half cupcakes, actually. That's what I celebrated with dinner last night. Just half a cupcake.
Cupcakes. Yeah, you take the half that's frosting. I'll just take that tub of frosting, please, and save that dry cakey part. The Brewers were winners in LA against the Dodgers, 4-0. I have no memory of those last few runs. I saw the one run by Luis Urias. The others came in the top of the ninth, I believe.
Yes.
And well past grandpa's bedtime out there. But you know, they looked all right. I can't obviously get too excited because the Cardinals are on fire right now. And by the way, not only are they on fire with this winning streak that they're on, but they're doing so with their old hero having returned home, Albert Pujols, chasing 700 home runs. So everybody's rooting for this guy. What did he hit last night? 693, I believe.
I saw him hit 691 over the weekend. So that sounds correct.
Yeah, and then he had a couple more. So, I mean, he's been on a tear along with the team. And it kills every Brewers fan. It kills every Cubs fan. That obviously they're division rivals, but this is Pujols is on his way out and he's not one of those, baseball villains. So, you kind of want to see, I want to see him get to 700 home runs. I just would like to see him do it in a loss day after day after day.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to root for. Maybe the Cubs fans though will, and just the team as a whole will get behind the Brewers because they hate the Cardinals that much, and they'll just give us this three-game series coming up this weekend at Amfield Field. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm reading here. Keston Hira had another home run. Talk about somebody with a hot bat lately.
Yeah. And, second consecutive game, I believe, and it was in front of his folks. His parents were in the stands yesterday in Dodger Stadium.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, good. Because again, we've got all these good components, and I don't know if it's a Craig Counsell thing. It's certainly an injury thing. Like, Aaron Ashby's, the latest pitcher to go on the injured list. What is that right combination that is going to have them hitting? You were telling me Yelich, I noticed that too. Yeah. He didn't bat leadoff for the first time in
months since.
Yeah.
I want to say, it was close to around June. Counsell made the move to put Yelich back into the leadoff spot, which is what he had batted in the past. But then when he was batting so well, they put him third because you want that good bat when you got some potential runners on base. And so he was in the leadoff again for most of this season now and was facing a little bit of a slump, got moved into the third position slot again to see if the change would help. and he got a double that scored. So he got an RBI with his double in the top of the ninth yesterday, and they were able to put some insurance runs on the board and put the Dodgers away that way.
So they will do it again tonight. Again, first pitch is at 9:10 Central Time.
Oof-da.
It really is. Although I will say that, and I've done this, you know, for a very long time. I in some ways I kind of look forward to the West Coast ball games. At least there's times when you kind of want to stay up later. In my case, especially doing working two jobs now, there's a lot to do. So I will sit here and peek out at the TV, you know, till well. And at some point, I don't remember when it was, you know, 10:30, 10:45. I finally pushed myself away from the desk and I thought that's probably a long enough work day. I'm starting to, you know, forget my name or whatever the case may be. But I still do. I still don't mind, you know, West Coast baseball once in a while. It's something that it's still relatively new in that you can get it, you know, on an everyday basis. Again, it's time for Grandpa to tell another story. When we were kids, the only way you were going to listen to your team if they were out west was hopefully find an AM radio station with an amazing signal, which was pretty near impossible given that thing called the Rocky Mountains. So you were, you know, if you didn't get your local affiliate to have your team's game, you probably didn't get a lot of West Coast baseball. Now, I am a huge proponent of local radio. I love what we're doing here on WXCO in Wausau. And in the early days of satellite radio, it would have been blasphemy to even talk about it. But as I've been talking to some old radio colleagues of mine, we understand this is the world that we live in now. It's not like satellite radio is going to go away. So we're going to talk about that while also saying local radio is the thing that continues to provide that hometown information. So with that disclaimer set aside, I will never forget my first year in the legislature. I treated myself to a Sirius XM receiver in the car. And it was one of my first drives to or from Madison, between Madison and Chippewa Falls, realizing that they had all of the baseball games. Excuse me, got to take a little drink here.
It's incredible, though, how the selection of games that you can get then that way.
They were all there. And so imagine my joy in driving back late one night and realizing I could hear Dodger baseball. I could hear the Padres. I really enjoyed the announcers. You know, they're not just, you know, your Vin Scullys, but what's Jerry's last name? The legendary San Diego Padres announcer. And he was unlike anything I'd ever heard before. So, and then of course all the other cities as well. So that part I've really enjoyed. Yes, now on TV where we get, you know, 5,000 channels and on demand on your computer, you can get, you know, games from just about everywhere. But when it was brand new and you didn't have to hear it through AM static or anything like that, that was especially sweet. And how ironic it is now that in this era with about 5,000 channels and there seems to be nothing you can't find unless your team is playing on one of those stupid streaming services, like when the Brewers have had to play games on Apple TV, or sometimes it's been on YouTube TV. Look, we followed it from AM, you know, into TV. We followed into satellite radio, and we'd love when games are online and you can put them on your computer screen. But now all the streaming services, you know, which, first off, you have to find them. And then second, you may have to pay for them, or you may have at least to give all your information over so that you can listen or watch the game. We are so fractured now from a media standpoint. There aren't nearly as many of those universal gathering places as there was when we all just had to gather around a radio and listen to a ball game. That's unfortunate. It's what we live in now, and we have to make those decisions of whether to get every single streaming service out there or draw the line someplace and say, you know, I might miss the game today, but I'm going to catch a good little show here on my local hometown station. And thank you for doing that this morning. We hope you'll do it again in our next hour. We'll be back. You're up north.